editorial cartoonists will have their pens at the ready as they watch the State of the Union tonight. Caricature and political cartooning is a craft that has worked hand in hand with the daily newspaper for generations, and we're going to talk about it on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Editorial cartoonists have to navigate some fine lines in political correctness. Phil Hands is the editorial cartoonist for the Wisconsin State Journal. He is the only cartoonist on the staff of a newspaper in Wisconsin. Phil, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, you have an interesting job. What is it that you like about being a political cartoonist, and what does your day look like?
Well, my day is pretty, I mean, it's a lot more conventional than you might expect. I go into an office every day and I absorb the news and what's going on around me, and I collect ideas. I let my brain synthesize what's going on and try and come up with something unique, interesting, funny, and different. And then I show my editor, the editorial page editor of the State Journal, Scott Milford, my sketches, and he says which ones he likes and doesn't like. And then I go up and I sit down and I draw a cartoon for about an hour or so, and then it's done. So it's pretty basic, but it's really fun, and it's a great way to the thing I love about the most is I get to use both sides of my brain every day. I get to use a very analytical, analyzing the news, thinking about what's going on in the world, and then I get to sit down and be an artist too, which is really great.
Well, you're also working at the intersection of, well, you know, taking some of the daily news and interpreting it, perhaps criticizing it, a little bit of political ribbing for both the left and the right. How do you walk that fine line of what is politically correct? What is PC?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't worry too much about what's politically correct. I know not to make fun of people based on their race or on their gender. That's definitely something I try to avoid doing. But I've spent a lot of time criticizing the President of the United States recently because there's a lot to criticize. But if I can make the lefties in Madison upset about something too, I like to think of myself as an equal opportunity offender. But you know, people seem to think everybody's viewpoints line up in these neat little boxes of everything you think must be liberal, everything you think must be conservative. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, everybody takes a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B. And whenever I see somebody from column A being ridiculous, I get to make fun of it, you know.
Do you go through a lot of drafts as you're working out a political cartoon?
Yes. Well, a lot of times I try and be very careful about the words that I use and how I word something and make sure that every word has a meaning to it. So sometimes it's editing down so they get to the very, you know, you want it to be as simple as possible, but also conversational when you have the words. And then a lot of it is sort of reframing the composition of a drawing to try and create the drama you're creating. You know, it's like when you're drawing a political cartoon, I like to think of it as being a film director, and I just get one scene to direct this. I'm directing a movie, but I only have one shot to do it, so I'm trying to tell the entire story in one shot. So that can be complicated, but it's also a nice challenge.
Well, there certainly aren't many of you guys and gals out there. Editorial cartoonists seem to be so much of a rare breed. Why aren't there more?
Well, I think a lot of it is that, our steady gigs are tied to the newspaper industry, and we all know that there are fewer jobs in newspapers than ever, you know, than there used to be. I mean, there are a lot of political cartoonists creating really interesting work, but they don't have steady gigs at newspapers. They have other jobs, and they're creating stuff for maybe an alternative weekly or for a website. And there are probably more of those than ever before, sort of part of the gig economy. But the idea of going into an office every day and drawing a cartoon, that is something that's sort of tied to the newspaper industry. And just like there are fewer film critics than before or fewer food critics than before or fewer sports columnists than before. There are fewer cartoonists than there were before. I think it's one of those things that newspapers think is sort of a luxury item or something that's nice to have as opposed to absolutely necessary. And I'm just really thankful that the state journalist decided that, you know, what I do is really valuable to them. And I think it is. It's amazingly valuable. And I wish more newspapers would see the value in giving some people some real entertainment entertainment and information at the same time.
Yeah, delve a little bit deeper into the value of editorial cartooning. What does it bring us? And also, if you could touch on what impact has social media had on cartooning?
Well, the value of it is that it really can, they say a picture, picture's worth a thousand words. And I, you know, that's sort of the goal every day with a cartoon is to create a picture that in one image and with a few words can tell a story that would take people, you know, maybe 10 or 15 minutes to read in the newspaper. So we're trying to get people information as quickly as possible and also entertain them. So it's got to be informative. It's got to have a strong point that shares a point of view, and it's got to entertain people. So that's the real value of it. And the role that social media has had is interesting because, you know, as a cartoonist, I've had cartoons that get shared by, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, maybe millions of people have seen certain cartoons that I've drawn, which is greater than any time in the history of editorial cartooning. You know, Herb Locke was the greatest cartoonist of the 20th century, and I've had cartoons that have, you know, been seen by more people than his cartoons were at a given time, thanks to social media. On the flip side, social media sort of it disperses the control of the product, and so, you know, despite the fact that I have cartoons that go viral and get seen by millions of people, I don't get any more money because of that, which is sort of the double-edged sword of social media. In the cartooning business, they always say, young cartoonists are always warned about doing something for exposure to get your name out there because lots of cartoonists have died of exposure.
Wisconsin State Journal editorial cartoonist Phil Hands is with us. We have a link, by the way, to a slideshow featuring 10 of his recent cartoons. It's on the Ideas Network Facebook page where you can make a post, 800-642-1234. You can also join us by phone. Is there a particularly memorable political cartoon that you'd like to discuss? Do you have an idea for a great political cartoon? What have you always wanted to know about political cartoonists but never had a chance to ask? Join in at 800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Well, President Trump is a pretty unconventional president in a lot of ways. Phil Hands, how is your work different with him in office as compared to a President Obama or a President Bush?
Well, President Trump provides a lot of pitfalls because, you know, there are things that he says on a regular basis that would mean the end of somebody else's political career, and Trump's able to get away with them. Which means that as a cartoonist, you know, if Obama were to say something like, there are rapists from Mexico, that would be the end of his political career, and we would focus on it like it was the most important thing he ever said. That was the start of Donald Trump's political career. And so you have to be careful as a cartoonist not to, you know, not to get sucked into the latest controversy over what he's said or what he's tweeted. Which can be really difficult because all of it does seem really outrageous. So it can be harder to find the deeper meaning as to what's going on in the Trump presidency. That doesn't mean that there isn't a lot of opportunity to do, sort of simple cartoons making fun of what he said. But you want to, I really try to limit doing that because there is so much, there's really important deep issues going on that I think are really important to get to, and I don't want to just be distracted by his Twitter feed.
Let's go to David now, who joins us from South Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hi, good morning. Always love the good political cartoon. My idea for one, if I may?
Mm-hmm.
Trump's riding into town on a white horse labeled racism. or perhaps birther, your choice, and he's sitting backwards on it with his arm outstretched, palm up, saluting a fascist past. And the horse maybe was wearing a white pointy hood, and surrounded on maybe, and the horse could be led by a 30-something with an odd-shaped head and Stephen Miller.
All right, David, lots of themes going on here. Phil Hands.
Well, yeah, thanks, David. I appreciate that. You know, I've been hesitant to use a lot of racist imagery when dealing with the president. Not that I'm a giant fan of him, but I feel like, you know, somebody once said when you start calling your political opponents Nazis, you've lost. So I did some pretty harsh cartoons about the president after Charlottesville, and I did some pretty harsh cartoons about the president after, you know, he said something about the blank hole countries in Africa.
Yeah, and we posted the president making a statement about a bleep hole countries and saying we need more people from Norway. In the frame right below that, there's your picture of this beautiful landscape with a bunch of happy-looking people, including a guy reading a newspaper saying, why would I want to move to his country? It would seem like that comment from the president was tailor-made for a cartoon. Is that how you saw it?
Yeah, that was one of those moments where I felt like I really had to comment in some way about it. And as opposed to focusing on the idea of the bleep hole countries and his animosity for people from the third world, you know, I thought that kind of explaining that there are parts of the, you know, there are reasons that not a whole lot of Norwegians immigrate to the United States anymore, and it's because, you know, there are places in the world that have higher standards of living than we do, and people consider America to be, in a lot of ways lacking in other parts of the world. And I think that was an important message to share with people who seem to think that we are always the best at everything.
Let's go to Marcelo now from West Lima. Hi, Marcelo.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I just had a suggestion for a cartoon as well. President Trump with one hand up in pledge, and one hand behind his back, fingers crossed.
Yeah, that kind of sums up the entire presidency, doesn't it? You know, how does somebody get away with perpetually, you know, saying one thing and then completely not meaning? I mean, you know, we used to say, well, if a politician said something, that means he's going to do that, and that doesn't. Those rules do not apply to this president, and it drives a lot of real journalists batty, because we're used to saying, well, he said that, so that means he's supposed to, you know, adhere to that, and Trump will just say, I never said that, when there's audio evidence of him, and you know, it seems like a good chunk of the population will say, well, he said he didn't say that, so he must not have said it. Stop being the fake news media. It's bizarre times we live in.
Marcelo, thanks. Let's go to Eric now in Cuba City. Hi, Eric.
Hi, I just had two quick questions. My first question is actually about your background. Somebody who wants to be a cartoonist, what do they study? Did you go to a four-year school? Was it in the fine arts or journalism? And then my other question is, I'm just curious, how does it work if you have to take a day off? Is there somebody else they call in to do a cartoon, or how does that work?
Well, so we subscribe to syndicated content, and I'm actually a syndicated cartoonist myself. So there are syndicates that distribute editorial cartoons across the country. So before I was hired by the State Journal, they just ran cartoons from other newspapers or other cartoons from other cartoonists, and we still can do those. So like in this morning's State Journal, actually there was a cartoon from somebody else in there, but I'll have a cartoon in Wednesday's newspaper. So if I take a day off, it's totally fine. There's always other content they can run in that cartoon slot. As for my education, like a lot of people in Madison, I'm probably overeducated. I have a bachelor's degree. I went to Kenyon College in a place called Gambier, Ohio, which actually is the same college that Bill Watterson, who drew Calvin and Hobbes, was a student there, and I actually had the same art professor that he did.
Oh,
so
wow.
I studied political science and art there, and also the cartoonist Jim Borgman, who was a Pulitzer Prize-winning political cartoonist and currently draws the comic strip Zitzwin, also went to Kenyon and had the same art professor. So I was sort of the black sheep of that whole collection of cartoonists. But yeah, so I studied political science and art, and then I came to Madison back in 2005, and I got my master's degree in journalism. So I sort of did art, political science, and journalism. I think that's a pretty healthy combination of degrees for being a cartoonist. But I also I think I'm the only cartoonist I know with a master's degree in anything. So.
Well, Eric, good questions. Thanks so much for joining us. Governor Scott Walker unveiled a tax credit that last week that would give families $100 for every child living at home and would be paid for with a budget surplus. Phil Hands, you portrayed that announcement as Walker singing a familiar sea chanty. Instead of "What do you do with a drunken sailor?" you came up with "What do you do with a budget surplus?" early in the polling. How did that come about for you?
Well, that was one of those cartoons that took quite a few drafts to get it to where I wanted to be. I wanted to try and get across this message of, you know, at the same time we're borrowing money, you know, the state is not paying for its roads right now. So we're borrowing money from future generations to pay for the roads of today. And then at the same time, we're going to start passing around, you know, we're going to start handing out checks to these children. We're expecting the children of today to pay for the roads of tomorrow, you know, but, you know, we're going to give their parents a giant check or a check to try and, you know, curry political favor with Walker's voters. But I sort of had this idea of Walker spending money like a drunken sailor. And the rest of it kind of, once that idea formulated, that this was an irresponsible way to spend money like a drunken sailor, the rest of it sort of fell into place. And then I had to come, it took me a while to come up with the line of early in the polling. That was a hard one. Because, you know, these songs, I figured that if I didn't have early in there, people might not understand what the song Drunken Sailor, you know, I thought that early in the morning was a key line of Drunken Sailor that needed to be in there.
They spend much of their workday navigating a very fine line at the intersection of criticism and cynicism and journalism as they perform this artistry. We're talking with Wisconsin State Journal editorial cartoonist Phil Hands, and we have a link to a slideshow featuring 10 of his most recent cartoons. It's on the Ideas Network Facebook page where you can post. Join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a particularly memorable political cartoon that you'd like to discuss? Do you have an idea for a great political cartoon? And what have you always wanted to know about political cartoonists? Join in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return after a news update. No question, there's plenty of fodder for political cartoonists these days. We've seen made-for-caricature moments in the daily news cycle. Plenty of personalities, plenty of scandals, and even though editorial cartoonists are fading from traditional newspapers, they do have a growing audience on social media. Phil Hands is the editorial cartoonist for the Wisconsin State Journal. He stays with us to talk about his craft on the morning show. You can ask him a question, 800-642-1234. Is there a particularly memorable political cartoon that has stuck with you over the years? Do you have an idea for a great political cartoon? Call in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Marcus now, who joins us from Prairie du Sac. Hi, Marcus.
Hi, this is Mark.
Mark.
That's fine. There's a cartoon by Bernard Gillum from 1883 where the notables of the day are sacrificing civil service reform before the god patronage, and it's rather, you know, it's like a pagan sacrifice where they're draining the blood and drinking the blood of civil service reform. And I thought of that when Governor Walker took after, you know, Wisconsin civil service, But, I mean, now it seems to me that it's democracy itself that it's on the altar, you know, that they're more or less selling us out to, you know, to the patronage. I mean, that, you know, now with unlimited campaign contributions and dark money and all this, so... That one just really stuck with me.
Yeah.
Know, I remember from a history book as a child.
Mark, thanks so much. And Phil Hands, what is your reaction to that particular cartoon from 1883?
Well, you know, it shows that, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same, right? I mean, so people have been drawing cartoons for hundreds of years about, and sometimes it's sort of the same issues we're talking about. And I've done cartoons with people sacrificing, you know, it's sort of I wouldn't call it a cliche, but that's something that we use, you know, we'll say people are sacrificed on the altar of gun rights in this country or the Second Amendment or something like that. So it's definitely a metaphor that I've used in the past to talk about an issue. And, you know, the thing that people were talking about 200 years ago, we're still talking about it today. And there's still and 200 years from now, we're probably still going to have some sort of smart aleck like me drawing images about what's going on in government.
How did you approach editorial cartooning during Act 10?
Well, that was a fun time. So I was, you know, I was probably a little bit slow to the Act 10 party, as it were. I was skeptical of the outrage at the governor's actions. But I have a couple of cartoons sort of making fun of the protesters and the public workers complaining about, you know, having to pay a little bit more for health insurance and pensions. And then I have quite a few cartoons of the governor being obstinate and unwilling to negotiate and unreasonable with people. So I sort of switched positions, you know, during the whole Act 10 debate. But that was one of those, you know, I remember sort of, I think it was after the recall election, I kind of took a deep breath and said, well, what do I do now? You know, It was sort of a year of just complete chaos from the editorial cartooning world or from the field of us. You know, it seemed like every day there was the newest outrage, and it was all great local content. And it was a great time, and I remember when it ended, it was just sort of like, well, what's next, you know?
Let's go to Marty now, who joins us from Kenosha. Hi, Marty.
Good morning. Anything that makes religious people squirm kind of makes me giggle, and the turban shrouded bomb on top of the guy's head from some Danish ad agency, that was priceless.
Oh, one of the forbidden cartoons from the Danish newspaper.
Yeah, Marty isn't with us. He just dropped, but yes, that was what he was referring to.
That was an interesting moment in political cartooning, because it was a Danish newspaper kind of pushing the limits of what free speech would allow, and angry people went and you know had death threats against the editor of that newspaper. I was actually at believe it or not, we do have conventions of us editorial cartoonists where we all meet together, and I was at a convention, and I actually sat at the same table as we had one of the leading cartoonists from Iran, believe it or not, and he was actually seated next to the editor of that Danish newspaper that published all the cartoons, and they had a very lively discussion about respect for religious images and the freedom of speech, and it was an amazing thing to witness and watch.
Let's go to Joe now in Gillett. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Good morning. Hi. There's a lot more digital in art these days, drawing tablets, all sorts of transmitting your art to editors, things like that. Did you ever get the chance to use the old dual-shade paper?
I did. Yeah. Oh. So back when I first started out, the Duochet, was that the one that had the chemicals that you would paint onto it to get the tones?
That's right.
Yeah. So, I got my hands when I was in college back in early 2000s. I got my hands on it. One of my cartooning mentors was a guy named Draper Hill, who was the cartoonist for the Detroit Free Press where I grew up, and he was a Duochet fanatic. And so he showed me how to use the stuff, and I got my hands on it. It's this great paper, and it would have it would you would draw on it like it was paper, and then you would get these chemicals, and you would take these chemicals, and then you would use that and paint on it. And when you painted the chemicals, it brought out the lines in the paper to sort of create instant cross-hatching. And you could get the Dua shade had lines in both directions. You could paint it with one chemical to get lines one way, and then another chemical to get lines the other way. And it was a really interesting way to get tones on an image before you could do it on the computer. So that's an awesome question. There are cartoonists who hoard the Dua shade stuff because they don't make it anymore.
No, they don't. I really like it. I liked it a lot because this is going to be an editorial cartoon. But it's going to be a funny one, hopefully. So I miss it. And now what software do you use, if any, right now for shading?
I use Photoshop and a software called Clip Studio because I've been doing a lot of drawing on a tablet nowadays. So Clip Studio is great for the tablet drawing, and it's inexpensive compared to Photoshop.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for calling in. Let's go to Mary in La Crosse. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I wish I had started cutting out political cartoons when Walker and Trump were both elected. The political cartoons are really very historical documents, and I did start cutting out, and the one I cut out most recently, because I hate filthy language, and I don't know if you drew it or not, I'd be interested to know, is the one with President Trump with a big head and his mouth wide open and a roll of toilet paper coming out. I thought that was so appropriate. I really hate filthy language. And the first thing I do when I get the Tribune every morning is look at the obituaries, and then I turn to the page and look at the Politico cartoon. Thank you for your work. And did you draw that one by any chance?
That's not mine, but it's a good cartoon, obviously. But yeah, the La Crosse Tribune runs a lot of my cartoons, but not all of my cartoons. So sometimes I use other people's content. But that's a great image, and you're right about cartoons being awesome historical documents. I someday would like to write a book about history. They provide a great instant snapshot of history. So when I was in grad school at UW, I wrote this really awesome paper on cartoons that were pro-Joseph McCarthy from the 1950s. The Chicago Tribune had three cartoonists who all loved Joe McCarthy in the 1950s. And we forget that there was half of America that thought Joseph McCarthy was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And, it's really awesome to look at cartoons can tell a really interesting story about the way people thought about certain things in this world.
Well, Mary, thanks so much for calling in and your perspective. Let's go to Kevin now in Janesville. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, good morning. My comment is more of a compliment to political cartoonists in general. I really believe you are the descendants of the ancient royal court jesters allowed to poke fun at the king to keep everybody humble and on task to serve the people. So thank you for the work that you do.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that is, and people say that. People will often say we're like the court jesters, and a lot of people take offense to that, but I don't, because the court jesters were often, if you read Shakespearean plays, the fool is often the only one allowed to speak the truth is the fool. So I do take that as a pretty big compliment, so thank you.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for calling in. Did you have a question, by the way?
No, that'll do it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Well, Phil Hands, I'm wondering, what cartoon of yours over the years have you been most proud of?
So I actually do have a favorite cartoon, and I'm not sure if you can find it on any websites or anything, but back several, probably about 5 or 6 years ago, there was a state lawmaker who was talking about having an Arizona-style immigration law in Wisconsin, because Arizona had that law that allowed police officers to pull over anybody they saw and ask them for their papers to prove they're citizens, then the implication would be that lots of Latinos and Mexicans would be pulled over. And so when somebody proposed that in Wisconsin, I did an image of the Milwaukee racing sausages in Miller Park with Chorizo being pulled over by a police officer and asked for his papers.
All right, you hit on all the buttons there. But why are some cartoons more malicious than others? Do you think they ever go beyond the boundaries of where they should go?
Occasionally, but I would say that's a very rare exception that a cartoon goes too far. And you know, a lot of it's your point of view. There are some cartoonists that think Donald Trump is giving it to the American political system, and the American politics deserves it. And I think a lot of people in Madison particularly would say, well, those cartoons are going too far and they're beyond the pale. But it's part of you know, our heritage of free speech and rights that cartoonists have to express themselves. And so I think very rarely do cartoons ever really go too far.
Well, Phil, this has been a blast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, my pleasure. I'd love to be on again sometime. This was really fun.
Phil Hands is the editorial cartoonist for the Wisconsin State Journal. And by the way, we have a link to a slideshow featuring 10 of his recent cartoons. That's on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Earlier, we talked with Jordan Fabian, White House correspondent for The Hill, getting a preview of the State of the Union address tonight, which will be broadcast on the Ideas Network beginning at 8 o'clock. This hour, The Morning Show was produced by Bill Martins and Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Ideas Network.